Welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. As always, you can follow thesabre.com throughout football season, basketball, all the way through baseball season for all you need on your Wahoos. Got a feature articles, analysis, plus, of course, the message board as always. And you can find the Who's On podcast on thesabre.com. You can also follow, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcast. Make sure to follow and subscribe, and also leave a five-star review if you really like what you're seeing out there. But today, let's get into our guest, because we got a good one today. We had the other half of this UVA and that announcing team, and this week we have John Freeman, voice of the Cavaliers on the Virginia Radio Sports Network. John, we had him on last week. I figured it was time to have your turn on here, especially all the grief you gave me this weekend about certain stats with certain tight ends. So, John, thanks for coming on.
Oh, man, you started out good with Ahmad, and now you're scraping the bottom of the barrel. And, well, I bet the Sabre had some interesting message board moments on Saturday night. I had the emotional swings of a middle school relationship during that game. It was wild. So we were in it. We weren't in it, and then we're back in it, and here we are talking about a 2-0 Virginia football team.
Man, I'll tell you what, I had my message board pulled up. Jackie Franchulli from 247, she had her message board pulled up, and we were just going back and forth on just the emotional roller coaster people were going through throughout that game. But let's get into that game now. Obviously, we were down there in Winston-Salem, UVA and Wake Forest, ACC opener. Just initial thoughts on that comeback. And it's actually kind of interesting because, am I wrong? Was the comeback at Louisville, was that your first game?
It was. it was my first game, and I was pretty sure it was going to be my last one. I was on an interim basis at that point, and that was essentially a tryout game. And I don't know who else they probably batted around the week after trying to get them to fill in. But I somehow earned a second game, and now here I am in my fourth season of Virginia football. But you look at comeback wins over the last couple years or over the last 10 years, and, like, this is up there. And when you think about how much was at stake in that game, just from a program standpoint, there's no secret. The last 2 years of Virginia football have not been good. Three wins is way lower than what we want and expect here at UVA when it comes to the football program. But there's been this belief in progress. There just hasn't been a lot to show for that progress. And starting out 1-1 overall and 0-1 in the ACC would have jeopardized that feeling of progress. And then a fourth quarter comeback on the road against Wake Forest, we have signs of progress, and we set ourselves up for this magnificent game at home against a rival at Scott Stadium against Maryland. And I just haven't felt like this in 2 years when you look at optimism and excitement about a home game coming up and this feeling like there's so much in front of us. And that's just a stark reality of it, of this game and seasons come down to results. And Virginia found a way to get a result. Virginia was 2-7 under Tony Elliott in games decided by a field goal or less. Now they're 3-7. And you'd like to think that they've learned from those past games and those tight games. And now all that pain that we've been through in the last 2 years, now it turns into progress. And I certainly feel that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the record in close games, because they had five losses last year in one possession games. And I think it was Trey McDonald talking about, you know, we talked about it all offseason, and, you know, you can be as close as you want, but it really doesn't matter unless you win. And that was finally the time that they broke through and found a way to win. I mean, I guess you could also count North Carolina last year on the road. They found a way to win that game as well, but it really did seem like kind of a watershed moment for the program. And just speaking about just how wild and close this game was and how much of an inflection point it is on the season, you know, going into the year, I felt pretty good. I've said probably at six wins, flirting with getting into a bowl game. And I think a lot of other people agreed with me. And we're sitting there in the box as this game is going on. And it's like, I don't know, maybe this is another three-win team for Virginia, because they're showing the same mistakes, the same penalties, turnovers. You know, the defense is getting shredded up and down the field. But then they found something. And you're like, All right, maybe I was right. Maybe they do have enough to get to six wins. And just it's incredible just early on in the season. And one game doesn't decide a season, but this game kind of decides a lot as in far as inflection points and being able to ride momentum early in the season, something this team hasn't had. And we mentioned it, and this is kind of Tony Elliott's big quote throughout the week and after the game. Program win. So first 2-0 start under Tony Elliott, and only the third for Virginia since 2013. First ACC opening win since 2020. And then one of the weirdest stats with Virginia football, first win versus Wake Forest since 2007, and first win at Wake Forest since 2002, which I believe one of your broadcasting compatriots was the quarterback in that 2002 game, and Matt Schaub, and snaps a 5-game losing streak. A lot of stuff. It was a lot of first, and that's kind of what the note said afterwards. Just what do you make of a program win like this?
As I said, the program needed to show signs of progress. And what was at stake in that game was exactly that. Are we going forward or are we going to continue to tread water? And not only was Virginia in jeopardy of losing the game against Wake Forest, there were points in that first half where they were in jeopardy of getting just blown away in that game. And what would that have done to this feeling of building? What would that have done to attendance the next week? What would that have done towards this desire to be competitive in the ACC? If you can't win on the road or even compete against Wake Forest, a team that's picked to finish right around the bottom of the ACC, then what does that mean for the rest of the season? And somewhere, somehow, the Hoos dug deep and just found a way. And Coach Elliott said it going in, just like you said, this is a program defining game. And Wake Forest, for the last decade or so, has been a program to emulate in the ACC. Yeah, they don't have the budget of FSU. They don't have the budget of Clemson. Well, guess what? Neither do we. Like, it's no secret. So to go down and beat a program like Wake Forest that does things the right way, has strict academic standards, doesn't have the budget of the top 15 programs in the country. Yeah, Wake Forest has produced quality players, NFL players, has played in the ACC championship game, has won bowls. They're a program that, if we look at their last decade of success, we would love to have that. And the best way to do it is go beat that program and start emulating it. Now, Wake Forest is a little down in the last couple of years, and there's no secret in that. But it was a win that really, for this program to move forward, we had to have. And the other thing, too, is the signs of progress aren't just the fact that we won the game. The signs of progress are in the minutiae of the game. So think about last year, Virginia as a team had 11 sacks. One of the craziest stats is that Cam Butler led Virginia in sacks last year, and he played 3.5 games. Anthony Calandria last year usually made his mistakes later in games through his interceptions in the fourth quarter when the game was close and didn't have the game management skills that you need to be an elite quarterback and lead your team to a win. So then you fast forward to Wake Forest. How many sacks do we have? I think it was
Six
five or
sacks.
six. Six
Six
sacks.
sacks. Yeah.
Like almost half of last year's output, or more than half. And then Anthony Calandria, after he throws that second half interception, go look at his stat line. It's something like 11 of 12, 100 plus yards, multiple touchdowns, leads the team down the field. So progress is the word that we keep using. And yes, winning that game is progress, but also how we did it, getting to the quarterback, and then our quarterback playing in the fourth quarter the way that a winning quarterback plays in this league, all those are really good signs moving forward.
Yeah, and we'll get more into Calandria's performance and also the sacks because I got a couple more points on there. But Calandria, just real quick, like he had a couple runs there where he, I think it was 10 straight completions or 9 straight completions, and he was just managing the game, working the ball up and down the field. But yeah, we'll talk about him a little bit more in a second. But you mentioned just kind of, some of those moments and kind of stuff. And I think one player after the game said, no, they wouldn't have won a game like this last year just because of all these different factors. Was there a moment, and I'm interested, especially from your point of view, was there a moment in the game as you're calling it, because you're right there, you're in the moment, was there one that's kind of stood out to you as like, well, that's different about this team?
That's an interesting question. I think the last drive for Wake Forest, where and not the one that had all the crazy laterals and nearly gave me a heart attack. The forcing the fumble, I thought was just this major moment because Wake Forest was close to field goal position. Our defense for the whole game, and Coach Rudd's philosophy is kind of bend but don't break. Try not to give up these huge plays. And the defense got to the point where if it bent too much, Wake was going to be in field goal position and they're going to be able to kick a field goal to win the game. And Wake's the most accurate field goal kicking team in the country over the last decade. So it's like not a position you want them to be in is kicking a field goal to win the game at the end. And this defense that had been banged up all game and was down multiple players, Antonio Clary kind of came out of nowhere, back in the game after being injured. And he makes that play along with Malcolm Green. That was a really neat moment where the defense had the wherewithal of, we got to make a play here. If we don't, we're not going to win this game. We can't just keep bending. We have to make a play. We have to break Wake Forest. And you saw the difference between the two teams in that very moment. So the ball's on the ground, and it comes down to just game awareness. The wide receiver for Wake Forest has a chance to just fall on the ball.
Far closer to the play. Yeah, far closer to the
He has a
ball.
chance to just fall on the ball. They have a first down. They're in field goal range. Everything is looking rosy for the Demon Deacons. He doesn't. And Antonio Clary has the mindset of, I've got to get this ball away. I got to take a risk. I got to fly in there. I got to take the ball away so that they're out of field goal range and we get the ball back. And you saw the difference in just game awareness. And that, to me, is this huge leap for Virginia. Yeah, last year, there just wasn't enough game awareness and situational awareness to win games in a lot of instances. This year, I feel like we have that. And it's because, you know, we've learned the hard way. There's no secret about it. And now we take those lessons learned and apply it to this season, and I think it's gonna make a big impact.
Yeah, you probably hit on the key moment for me as well. Just that play right there, kind of. I don't remember a lot of those plays going Virginia's ways in the past couple years. Like they don't get those huge clutch late fumble recoveries that, you know, Wake was on the UVA 29 yard line. That's a 46 yard field goal. And like you said, Wake Forest has been pretty reliable. And that's a pretty, you know, for a college kicker at the Division I Power 5 level, that's a kick they should make. And so it was kind of one of those do or die moments. Either you get a turnover like that, or they kick a field goal and they win the game. And that was kind of just one of those defining moments. So I'm glad you picked that one because that's kind of what I was thinking, but it's interesting to kind of hear it from your perspective as you're going through this game. But we're gonna get a lot more into kind of the offense, the defense in this game. We've mentioned them kind of briefly overall, but we're gonna get into those breakdowns coming up just after the break here on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. Of course, my guest today, the voice of the Cavaliers, John Freeman. And right now we're going to get into the offensive breakdown for this UVA and Wake Forest game. And we'll start at the top, start at the quarterback position, start with Anthony Calandria, his second start this season. And at times it seemed like, where are we going? He got unlucky in the first interception, a tip pass that falls into the arms of the big defensive lineman there. You know, not much you can do. But the second pick, oh, underthrew a pretty open receiver. He had a window there to get the ball. But overall in the game, 33 completions, 33 for 43, 357 yards, three touchdowns, two interceptions. The 33 completions, the most since Brennan Armstrong in 2021 at Pitt. That was an interesting game, thinking back to that one. And then right now, currently 654 passing yards, 10th in the country and fifth in the ACC. A lot of quarterbacks right now airing it out in the ACC. Your thoughts on Calandra? You talked about it a little bit earlier, but just kind of week two, seeing him against a tougher opponent in the ACC now.
Let's not forget that Anthony Calandria has played in, I think, 10 college football games. He's a true sophomore, and the mistakes are explainable simply by youth. You don't see a lot of true sophomores at the quarterback position come in and play many perfect games. And I think the story of Calandria's game is how he responded to that second pick. Just like I said earlier, he was flawless after that second interception. And that's part of the allure of Calandria is I don't think there's a quarterback in the country that has a more short-term memory than Anthony Calandria. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad in a way, but he is such a playmaker. And when he is on your team, there's just always this feeling of we're still in it. He can make magic happen. And some of the other things that stood out about his performance is there was a couple of fourth downs where we just had to have a few yards. And he threw the ball and he made the right decision. And the right decision is throw it to Malachi Fields, first of all. But don't go for the home run. Just get the yards that you need and keep the drive in the game alive. So I thought he was fantastic. And I'll say this when I'm asked about him, and I told Coach Elliott this. Just as someone who's been around Virginia football for my whole life, growing up in Crozet, and I'm a fan first and a broadcaster second. I remember every starting quarterback since like the early 90s for UVA. I guess Sean Moore is like one of my first memories going to one of his games. And you look at the quarterback position at Virginia, and we've had a lot of good quarterbacks. We've had a lot of guys that have broken records. We've had a lot of guys that have played in the NFL. Sean played in the NFL, Aaron Brooks, Matt Schaub, Bryce Perkins made rosters, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some guys that got to the league. And I think about the quarterback position at Virginia, the face of the program, which Anthony Calandria at this point I would argue is. And there's one quarterback that comes to mind that has kind of captivated Virginia fans in the way that Calandria has. Perkins is really close, but he wasn't here for very long. He's only here for 2 years and he transferred in. I would say Anthony Calandria captivates Virginia fans similarly to the way that Marcus Hagans did when he
I knew
was a
you're going
player.
that way.
He's small, he's charismatic, he's got a lot of personality. He does things that are improvisational that you don't expect. He can go out and win games. There's something about Calandria that just draws people to the game to watch him. And he's a wonderful entertainer. He's learning how to be a winner in the way that Marcus Hagans did. And I think there's just a little something that he gives to this program and this fan base that not a lot of quarterbacks have. And I can't wait to see where it goes. I saw some stat where in the ACC, there's 17 teams, I think. Maybe if you count Notre Dame, 18.
For today.
There's only three or four starting quarterbacks in the ACC that began their career at the school where they're starting. So Anthony Calandria is homegrown. Like he's ours. We found him. We brought him in a spring early. We developed him. And there's something to be said about that. This is a guy that wanted to be here coming out of high school. And now he's leading a program that he decided he wanted to lead. Not transferring in because the position was opening, but he came here to earn the job. He earned it. And now he's running with it.
Yeah, and I love that you bring up, that Dagum number 18, and I called him as a kid the magician. As a kid growing up watching Virginia football, like if you didn't like Marcus Hagans, I don't know what was wrong with you. Just and like you were talking about, just kind of the inspiring the imagination of a fan base and just kind of what is possible when he's back there at quarterback. And Calandria does have a lot of that. I think also just kind of the ability to be like, well, maybe it's not done. And I think maybe Virginia fans last week, They're kind of getting a little down because it's what the program has been the last couple of years. But, I think that might be turning now when you're like, all right, well, they came back. It really, 13 points in the third quarter sounds like a lot, but if you get a stop, and I know that was probably the holdup for fans, is like, I don't know if they'll get a stop. But Calandra certainly showed that he had the ability to move that offense up and down the field against Wake Forest all game. And, he certainly did that as he got in there. I think the cool thing about his performance against Wake Forest, especially, is I mentioned it earlier, he had a couple, I just get streaks in there where he had, 10 straight completions in the second quarter when, they had the two touchdowns to Tyler Neville, the tight end. And then towards the end, when they had two more touchdowns, he had nine straight completions when they scored, the Trell Harris touchdown and then Grady Brosterhouse pushing his way into the end zone as well. So the key moments of that game and when Virginia kind of hung around is when he found a rhythm, he found a groove, he was completing short passes, he was getting larger chunk plays down the field. They had 12 big plays in the passing game, or 10 play, big plays in the pass game, 12 big plays overall. And all of that was pretty much him throughout the game. And so it's been interesting to see kind of his development as he keeps going. But it really helps when you have a receiver out there like number eight, Malachi Fields, who is our Who's On Podcast Player of the Game, is voted by you as the fans. Go through the results of that poll real quick. Had Malachi Fields in there, 53.6% of the vote. Anthony Calandria had 18, Tyler Neville at 20, and Antonio Clary 7%. Just to kind of a little, I what do you think of the? Do you think I had the right four in there? I was trying to go through it post game, and
I have a write-in nomination.
write in.
The man with like the highest first down touchdown per carry ratio in maybe college football history, Grady Brosterhouse. Think about where we were last year. Last year, Virginia refused to go under center when we started the season. Remember that? Like every fourth and short or third and short, the team was in shotgun. And this is when like the tush push was becoming more widely used and every team had installed in their packages. And Coach Elliott, to his credit, adapted. Because when he first showed up of, well, if your quarterback's under center, they haven't taken a snap under center since warmups and things could go wrong. And he adapted and they figured it out and they installed the tush push. The only problem is now they have a 182-pound starting quarterback. So who in their right mind was like, let's just take the walk-on quarterback and make him our tush push specialist. And how cool is that? That a walk-on quarterback scored the game-winning touchdown in the first ACC game of the season. It's been a fantastic weapon. I think the tush push has really helped Virginia. And hats off to the coaching staff for adapting, identifying, what wasn't working, and fixing it, and then doing it with a daring set of personnel. Now, I am excited to ask Coach Elliott if they, in fact, in the program, call it the Grady Bunch, because that's the nickname that's been floating around the fan base. But we'll confirm tomorrow on our coaches show if it is in fact the Grady Bunch.
Yeah, what are they calling on the sidelines when they're sending those guys out there? The fact that you got, Jack Greasy back there too, walk on running back. It's a really interesting group of personnel that they had last year, and I think it's just kind of had it finally had its like big moment where people were like, I mean, I see fans all the time being like, it's fourth and one, go for it, just run the Grady Bunch out there. Like you got it, you got the personnel to do it, and it's become like one of those automatic plays that everyone, is surprised if it doesn't work, and it didn't work one time in the Richmond game, but we won't have to remember that for very long. But back to the Who's On Podcast Player of the Game, Malachi Fields, 11 catches, 148 yards, both of those career highs for him. Play of the game offensively for me was his fourth down catch. Because you're sitting there and you're like, what are they gonna do? Are they gonna try and run the ball, or try and throw the ball? You gotta get the first down here. And there's no doubt as soon as they drop back who that ball was going to Malachi Fields.
I mean, he looks like Larry Fitzgerald out there. He's absolutely huge. This guy puts in so much time and work in the weight room, and he's a nightmare. I mean, he absolutely is. He's faster than you would think, but he is just as physical as he looks. And you'll notice cornerbacks when they line up. Just take a look next time. Field splits out wide, and the cornerback that he's lined up with, it's like a man versus a boy. And Fields, targeted 13 times, makes 11 catches, 46 yards after the catch. Just shows you how hard it is to bring him down. And I've got a soft spot for Malachi Fields. I mean, think about Preston, name Virginia's best offensive player, probably Malachi Fields. Who's their best defensive player? First team
Jonas
all, Jonas Saker. What do
Anker.
they have in common? They both played high school football 3 miles away from Scott Stadium. So,
Oh, I thought you were
to
going to
me,
say their high school careers were covered by Preston Willett. I thought
that too. Yeah. So you
that
discovered them.
was. I'll take no credit.
The fact that Malachi was a high school quarterback, and here he is, probably the top wide receiver in the ACC, and Jonas Saker was a high school quarterback and playing eight man football, and he is the top safety in the ACC and maybe in the entire country, according to the video game. The fact that those two guys, under recruited out of Charlottesville, shining for this Virginia football team, to me, that is a fantastic story and one of the more unique ones when it comes to an ACC school.
It's still one of my favorite stories every year, just to see the growth these guys have had. I remember I interviewed Malachi Fields after his first start as a quarterback in high school for the Monticello Mustangs, and let me tell you, it was pulling teeth just to get a one-word response out of him in the post-game interview. But he's grown so much since then, and I remember I think it was his final high school game, and he had six touchdowns in his last game. It was punt return, throwing the football, running the football. I think he even caught one. He did everything, and it's really cool to see him and also Sanker, as you mentioned, just kind of get to this profile on this stage and seeing where they've come from. Because I think I covered Jonas when he was in eighth grade. I think that was his first year on the Covenant football team. When and I think they played 11 man, and then they transitioned to 8 man that next year. And just to kind of see what they've grown. But yeah, Fields, I very high on him coming into the year. I said guarantee at least second team all ACC, and I may have undershot him now. I mean, maybe he is first team all ACC at the end of the season. I think he's got to get some touchdowns to go with the receiving yards to probably earn that, because there's some good receivers in the ACC right now. He leads the ACC currently after two games with 248 receiving yards. And it's still the wildest stat coming into the year that he had never gone over 100 yards, and now he's done it in back-to-back games to open this season. But love his growth, and he does seem like if there's ever a question, the ball's going to number eight on any key down. We talked about it, mentioned it. Tyler Neville, the tight end out of Harvard, four catches, 68 yards, two touchdowns. These stats provided to you by none other than myself. First tight end with two touchdowns in a game since Tom Santee against Duke in 2007. And then, because John Freeman inquired, first tight end with two touchdowns and a half since Heath Miller against Akron in 2004. Some pretty good tight ends in the history of Virginia to kind of have that number. Just what have you made of Tyler Neville coming in? And obviously there's a little bit of hype, kind of maybe an undercurrent of hype in the preseason, just what he could do for this position.
Well, first of all, I'm going to challenge you to go even deeper, like I did on game day. You got first to make two touchdown catches in one half. How about one quarter? Because he did it all in one quarter. I don't know how you'd go back in the record books and find that, but whatever you did to find the last two was exceptional. Tyler Neville's an amazing story. First of all, I think we saw that with the national TV package that came out about him over the weekend and his battle through cancer. You look at a player who has defeated cancer and gotten a degree from Harvard. Like, that's a lot in the first 22 or 23 years of your life. From a football standpoint, so I get to go to every practice, and I went on Tuesday of last week, which is kind of the practice where you start to see who's probably going to play, who isn't, and what they're looking to do. It's the most really full speed, full pad practice of the week. And it was Calandria who threw a route to Neville down the far sideline in an 11-on-11 full contact drill. And Neville made one of the most spectacular catches I've ever seen. I mean, backpedaling, reached out. It looked like Odell Beckham, snared
Wow.
it with one hand, came down, and like practice almost stopped. Like everybody just like took a moment to realize what had just happened. And I was on the near side, and the play happened on the far side, and one of the officials, because they have officials at practice, and one of the officials just kind of looked around. And he like tried to make eye contact with the coach. He goes, He's a starter, right? Like was what the question that he asked. And it was at that moment where I was like, wow, this guy's different. And Virginia didn't have a lot of catches from tight ends last year. I think it was 12 overall
Yep.
from the tight end position. We had five in one single game last week. So, and four of them coming from Tyler Neville. He is a different weapon that we haven't had at that position in a while, and we haven't used that position much. He gives us a reason to use it. So those two catches were nice, especially the first one. He had to work for it, twisting, adjusting, looking up into the lights. But that's the type of plays that we can expect from him carrying forward. And I think Tyler Neville playing this way in the ACC, his body type, his ability to high point the football, this is a guy that could be playing himself onto an NFL roster.
Yeah, I wrote an article about Tyler Neville, the tight end position at UVA. That's over at thesaber.com right now if you want to check it out. But basically, I don't think a lot of fans, especially of recent times, remember how many tight ends UVA was producing back in the early 2000s with Al Groh as head coach. Everyone, obviously, they know Heath Miller. They know that name. He played, had a long career in the NFL, but guys like Tom Santee, who we mentioned, Jonathan Stupar, John Phillips, like it was a tight end factory for a while at Virginia. And I think a lot of people were making the case that it was tight end U in that early time frame. Miami probably has something to say about that too, with the success they had. But I know you remember those days, and just to see kind of the tight end position, it kind of had a brief renaissance a couple of years ago with Tony Poljan and Jelani Woods, but then took a break after Woods graduated or went on to the NFL. And now to see Tyler Neville come back and to see kind of the willingness of the coaches to find a way to make that work. Cause obviously we've known they've had good track record re with receivers, from Malachi Fields now and Malik Washington last year, but to kind of incorporate that position into the offense more has been kind of interesting. The tight end position just has kind of always been an interesting kind of up and down thing for Virginia. And just to kind of see it incorporated is cool, especially for fans that have been around for a long time. Looking at my one question coming out of this game was the run game. And didn't get a chance to ask Tony Elliott about it after the game, finite amount of time, only a number of questions, probably something we'll ask this week. Kobe Pace only had five carries after the great game that he had in the opener against Richmond. 200 yards to the season opener, only 73 against Wake Forest. Didn't really seem like they wanted to run the ball a lot. Maybe it was knowing that maybe they weren't having success on the few plays that we did see. And it just, there's one tweet that I saw afterward. I don't know if you saw this one, John, but someone tweeted, what if UVA just never ran the ball again, throw it every play? And Brendan Armstrong quote tweeted and said, "We've done that before. It was fun as hell, not gonna lie." Everyone can remember that 2021 Robert and I offense. Just your thoughts on the running game this past week.
I don't know. I'm looking at it as maybe a one-off because Tony Elliott, he wants to run the football. He said that since he showed up in Charlottesville. Now we've got a dynamic quarterback, so that helps. And if he can whip out 350 yards passing every single game, yeah, maybe you don't need to run it as much. But yeah, it is surprising. I mean, you look at the rushing amount and quarterbacks in this game, Calandria and Brosterhouse combined rushed 14 times. Running backs rushed 14 times. So the balance is off. I mean, there's no, and I don't know what the desired balance was, but that's an odd amount of carries for your quarterbacks compared to your running backs. And I was just talking to Ahmad during the game, my color analyst. He was like, this is really hard on Virginia's defense in the same way that we saw it in the Brennan era of, yeah, when you throw it, your defense just feels like it's on the field all the time because drives aren't long and plays are bigger and it's easier to go three and out, and your defense just spends more time on the field, and ours did, and attrition really hit hard. So there's a lot of effects to not running the ball. But we also came out and won the game. So I don't know. I'm not in the minds of the coaches. Maybe they saw something that Wake Forest presented in the passing game. I will say that Virginia did an excellent job of identifying where some of the weak links were on the Wake Forest defense. So an example of that is Trell Harris caught three consecutive passes on the same cornerback, who ironically was his teammate at Kent State.
Capone Blue, yep.
So they found something there really quick. And yeah, they found it once, and they're not going to run the ball. They're going to throw it again. And then they're not going to run the ball after that. They're going to keep throwing it until Wake Forest stopped it. So some of it is explainable in that way of just there were some really good matchups on the field that we exploited. But as far as the balance, only 15 or 14 carries from your running backs in a game that had a lot of snaps in it. That's pretty surprising. I don't know what it means moving forward, if it's a new philosophy or just a one-off, but we'll find out under the lights in Scott Stadium.
Yeah, real quick, let's transition to the defensive side of the ball. They allowed 544 yards, which during the game, it seemed like Wake was moving the ball up and down the field. It didn't feel like it was the most yards that UVA has given up under John Rudzinski, but it was, and the most they've allowed since they were at BYU in 2021 when they gave up. This number still just kind of shocks me to this day, 734 yards in that game. And I felt every single one of those yards, covering that game on the sidelines. So interesting performance, and it was a lot of bend but don't break. There were some good, stops there to, hold them to a field goal here, or, kind of find a way to get a stop here and there. But looking at the defensive injuries, Virginia had a lot of guys down on the field, and so you had a lot of injury timeouts, I'm sure, just kind of filling time there for a little bit. Cam Robinson went down, and Corey Thomas also. We don't know quite their status yet going into next week, but Trey McDonald and Malcolm Green were two guys that came into the game, had some ups and downs, but also made two really big plays. And we talked about the Malcolm Green forced fumble earlier, so we don't have to get too much into that. But Trey McDonald had a big sack there on fourth down. Just kind of the depth this defense now has to be able to withstand some of these injuries is kind of impressive.
Yeah, and depth helps you win football games. We haven't been a very deep team in the last 2 years, and that mounts up as the season goes on. And to see someone like Trey McDonald step forward in the way that he did, I think he's one of our top three leading tacklers, and he's not even a starting linebacker. I love Trey's story. He's a great student, first of all, and he's a program guy. How many players come in and are backup? And then someone like Cam Robinson gets recruited over them, and it looks like they're going to be a backup again, and they actually stay. And Trey stayed. He's fighting for his job. He's fighting for time, and he got his opportunity. And what tells me that Trey is all in is watch him on special teams. A lot of guys don't like playing special teams. You don't dream of being on the kickoff coverage unit. You dream of being in on fourth and one as a linebacker and getting a big stop. Trey goes all out on every single special teams play. And because of that, he's someone that the coaches trust. And he's a guy that I think could have a big impact here, because we're not going to stay healthy all season. It's just a fact of college football. So him leading the example of our depth is true. And then defensive line, we got a lot of guys subbing in and out now. So there's not so much pressure on the interior defensive linemen. I think our depth is in a much, much better spot than it's been in the last couple of years, for sure.
You mentioned Trey McDonald, probably had the quote of the weekend in my books, at least. Quoting Cam Robinson, what he told him when he was going out on the field, he said, "Yeah, let's go, white boy, let's go." Quote of the weekend. I mean, there's a lot of good inspirational quotes. That one took the cake for me. Looking at six sacks, we mentioned it earlier. It's the most since at Georgia Tech in 2022 when they had eight sacks in that game. That was the Chico Bennett, Nick Jackson homecoming return. Superstar showdown that they had. But only one of these sacks, and it's really interesting, only one came from a defensive lineman, and that was Chico Bennett. Everything else, linebackers, defensive backs. So we talked about getting more pressure, but there's a lot of blitzing in this game.
Yeah, I mean, you had to figure out some way to get to Wake Forest quarterback. And I think there's a couple plays too where like the scorekeeper at Wake Forest didn't give our guys the benefit of the doubt. Like there were some tackles right around the line of scrimmage, and I was
Yeah,
like,
it was
I think he
close.
lost an inch, which would qualify it as a sack. And they were like, rush for 0 yards and no
Yeah.
gain. So it could have been more sacks, but that's a huge thing for this Virginia defense. I mean, they got almost no pressure on the quarterback last year. 11 total sacks as a team is that was one of the lowest in all of college football. And now suddenly it's pivoted and looks like a strength. And Ahmad said this best, listen to his podcast and his breakdown of the Richmond game. He was like, we just kept it vanilla on defense. You know, I know
Yeah.
fans were kind of like, well, we only had one sack. Are we, you know, just where we are last year in terms of not being able to get to the quarterback? It was like, well, no. I mean, their quarterback, you know, we were comfortable with him throwing the ball. We didn't need to get pressure necessarily. We only rushed four every time. Wake Forest, oh, we rushed and we got there. And that's a big difference from this year's team. That when we bring the blitz, we trust our secondary to cover, and we've got the guys that can get to the QB.
Yeah, and Ahmad was on here last week as well, talking a little bit about that. And it just, Cam Butler's dropping back into coverage against Richmond. They weren't trying to go all out. And so this game, again, they were trying to go all out. And you mentioned that about kind of the sack counting and stuff. Bachmeier is so close to the line of scrimmage by the time he finishes that slow mesh that it's like, I think it's almost by default now. They're just like, oh, I think he got a yard.
Yeah, it's a bizarre
Yeah.
offense. But yeah, I remember you get excited, you see the quarterback go down and then be like second and 11. But we'll take them.
Yeah, however you can get them. I expect them to probably try to bring the blitz a little bit more this season just to kind of, help bring some more exotic looks and get after the quarterback. Quick look ahead right before we get out of here, John. As someone that's been around the program for a long time, as a fan, as a student, now as in your official capacity, Maryland coming to town, looking back on this rivalry. It's their first trip to Charlottesville since 2012. Virginia hasn't won against Maryland since 2011, and their last win in Charlottesville, 2008. So another kind of weird stat there, but of course Maryland's been off in Big Ten land. So just reminiscing, any memories about this Maryland rivalry over the years?
I remember when Al Groh's team thumped them in Scott Stadium in the early 2000s. I think it was a beautiful night too, and the stadium was packed. And I think this game has been one that we've craved for several years. Virginia's undefeated; they're 2-0, and as you said, they haven't been 2-0 in a long time, or they've only done it a few times in the last 10 or so years. So this is everything you want in college football. We got a home game. The weather hopefully will be nice. It's not like this is some chilly November game. Students are all here. They're not on break. You have a rival coming in. There's history here. We're a program on the rise. They played last year, so there's some things to get back at them for that. I mean, this is a dream non-conference game. I can't think of a single team that I would want in a non-conference game coming to Scott Stadium more than Maryland next week. I mean, it's a perfect matchup, and credit to our administration for this. You know, you look at a lot of other schools and their scheduling philosophy, and you know, we could have gone out and scheduled a team that we have nothing in common with. We could have scheduled Memphis. I don't know. I'm just naming a team. We could have scheduled Minnesota like Carolina did at the start of their season. We could have scheduled UConn. There's a million teams that you can schedule at a conference. But we went and scheduled a power conference team and a rival. And we did it again when we scheduled NC State for the next couple of years to go there and then come back here. So hats off to our administration. College football is, in all honesty, it's losing a lot of rivalries like this because of realignment, and because of just the way everything is shifting and scheduling is its own animal now with a 12-team playoff. But our administration said these rivalries are important to our fans. They're important for claiming territory for your program. How many high school football games have our coaches gone to recruit in and looked across the sideline and seen some Maryland gear from their coaches? So for me, this game is special because it's everything that we loved about college football in the past, and we're getting to experience it in the present.
Well said. Regional rivalries. Who would have thought that, that kind of adds some extra juice to that non-conference schedule or your conference schedule as well.
I will say this too, just from being an insider of the athletic department. Maryland's bringing a lot of people. Like, that's a fact. Like, they've bought a lot of tickets, and they're coming. So we gotta make sure that we respond too.
Yeah, and another interesting side fact is the quarterback for Maryland, Wake Forest transfer originally. So you go from Wake quarterback last week, I guess Wake adjacent, all the places Hank Bachmeyer's been in his career, to now Billy Edwards for Wake, spent 1 year at Wake, spent at Maryland now for a couple of years. Interesting dynamics all around there. One memory for me, just as a fan watching this Maryland rivalry over the years, I remember, I can't remember which game it was, but we had two, we were sitting in our seats, two fans come over, students, mud all down their backs. I think it might have been a rainy game or something before, and the rain had let up, and mud all down their backs. And we're like, these two Maryland students were definitely going over onto the hill. They're sitting over there, and now they kind of came and sat in front of us. And me, as like an 8-year-old kid, I was giving them the business because it might have been one of those games when Virginia was kind of racking it up against Maryland. I read the 2008 one, the last one they won in Charlottesville, that was 31 to nothing. Could have been that night, not sure. A long, long, long time ago. But John, I want to thank you for coming on. I know we got a busy week ahead to get ready for this 8 o'clock kickoff on Saturday night in Scott Stadium. I was kind of thinking about it. It's probably going to be pretty similar timing wise to the Richmond game just by the end of
Gosh, I was prepared to sleep in that stadium. So I'm gonna make a
it.
call to our sports information director and say, 8 o'clock kickoff. Let's see if we get some coffee in
Yes.
that press box. We'll be ready though. As long as it takes, we'll be ready for it.
We are going to need it. John, thanks again for joining us. That is it for the Who's On podcast. We will see you again later this week to preview that Maryland game. Thanks for joining in.